Attention, radio listeners.
Ooh, Thomas, get out of town. Wow.
Let me have your attention for a moment.
Goodness, is that a message? Oh, mommy, please, get me out of this game.
You weren't paying any attention.
Interesting move here, Bill. Shays came into the basketball game. Jim Boeheim has inserted Shays into the game. Big guy inside, maybe to help eliminate that second or third shot.
Your attention, please.
This is Centers of Attention with Aton Thomas and Danny Shays.
And good morning on Centers of Attention. I am Danny Shays, and the big fella Aton Thomas in the house with us today. And we got some fun stuff to talk about today. We've got, of course, the Patriots having a rough week, lose a game at home, couple of bad calls. Then they get busted for cheating, maybe. Talk about that. And obviously huge news, huge Yankees news with big signings. And in college, lots of stuff going on in college. Aton, how you doing this morning, man? You ready for some fun today?
Oh, I'm doing good. There's a lot of news. We have a lot to talk about. So let's do it.
All right. Well, and of course in the big performance day, I don't know if you saw this, Wayland Baptist guard JJ Culver dropped 100 last night in a win. They ended up beating Southwest Adventist 124-60. And again, he dropped 100. He ended up 34 for 62 from the field. The rest of the team, 8 for 15 combined. So, so you know, this begs a couple of questions, right? First of all, he only got 100. And when I say only, right, 34 for 62 from the field, I mean, come on, when you score 100, you got to shoot better than 50%. You know, only 12 for 33 from three. Normally you think a game like that, you're going to, you know, just shoot lights out. 62 right. FGAs, that's a good month for me back in the old days. And so you got to wonder, okay, you're up 50 and your boy's still going for 100. You know, at what point are you rubbing it in?
I don't know. It's tough because, you know, we've played, you know, I coach AAU now, and we've had some games where we weren't doing well and teams didn't let up on us. They were still pressing. They were still, you know what I mean? Everything like that. So I think that's just the nature of it now. But it's funny because the next highest score was like 8 or something like right. that. So he got all the shots. But that, I got to watch the game. I want to look at the whole game and see how he scored all of these points. But that's something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And his brother, Jared Culver, is a rookie for the Timberwolves. So, you know, it's a basketball family, and, you know, he's a 6'5 senior guard, so we'll see if he has a little future beyond that. But dropping 100. You and I were joking about this earlier. You know, I mean, normally centers are not necessarily, especially in our era, you know, weren't the 50-point-a-game guys, because, you know, it took too hard to get the ball that many times. You know, if you got too good a game, you know, sometimes the guards get jealous, stop throwing it to you. But, my career high, I do still own the Utah Summer League record. I did drop 60 in a game in the Summer League. That was a lot of fun. But that was a real game. You know, that was like, you know, it was like an actual kind of close game. You know, we weren't up by 60.
Yeah, I have never scored 60 ever, so I don't have any story to add to this in any rec league or anything. I've never scored 60, so you're on your own with that one.
Well, and so we'll say, you know, like I said, it's a big thing. There's only been a few players in history, as you can imagine, to score 100. Obviously, Wilt, the only player in the NBA ever to score 100. Bevo Francis, you might remember Bevo, the only other NAIA guy who scored. He scored 113 in a game and back in the 50s. In Division I, Frank Selvey did it again in the 50s. There was a guy in D3, I saw Jack Taylor, dropped 138
Goodness.
In a game. And he had the two highs, 138 and 109. In back-to-back seasons. So maybe they just didn't have anybody else who could shoot on their team. I don't know. That's when you're dropping 100, it's, you know, the fellas must really like you to keep feeding you that much.
That's true. I mean, I want to see the game when Wilt scored 100, you know what I mean, for a big man to do it. And they just must have been posting him up every single time, but there's no footage of it. You only know
footage.
You know what I mean,
the picture. Was not recorded, was not videoed.
Right.
What was interesting about that game, you know, the thing that made it key, you know, we talked about shooting a high percentage. You know, of course, Wilt, known to be one of the worst free throw shooters in history, was actually 28 for 32 in that game from the line.
Wow.
And, you know, again, no three-point line. So, you know, he had to get everything inside. So, you know, that was the big thing. You know, him, you know, shooting, you know, making 28 free throws in the game. That was the big deal in that one. But, yeah, so maybe you and I think, you know, what was the old joke? You know, you could lock me in the gym. I couldn't get it by myself. I couldn't score 100.
I mean, that's a lot of points. that's a lot.
That's a lot of points. That's a lot of points. So, you know, so kind of getting back to the real games, another number one got beat by another unranked team. I think that's the third or fourth time that's happened this year. And Louisville going down at home to Texas Tech. I got a good buddy who played there, so he's, of course, he's chirping right now. And so that's... you know, that's another one. College basketball, man. It's, the season hadn't even started yet as far as the conferences, and already we got, I think, four number ones have been beat already.
Well, I saw that number three, Maryland, you know, everybody's big on Maryland down here, and they lost to Penn State. And so that was kind of a big upset, too. But I love upsets. You know what I mean? And I don't understand how, and this is one thing that I wanted to ask, how do they determine what teams are ranked? Do you know what I mean? Because sometimes, especially in the beginning, I'm like, okay, y'all are just kind of throwing a crapshoot and, you know, don't know who to rank. But how do they really determine who's ranked? And, you know, because a lot of times you see those rankings and I'm like, why are they ranked so high? You know, it's just interesting. Interesting. I'd like to know their process of doing that.
Yeah, especially this early in the season, you know, so much of it is subjective. You know, who's looking good, who's playing good, who's got, you know, maybe you get a, you know, you get a hot streak like we saw Michigan go from unranked to number four. You know, they won a couple games in a row, then they lose their next game. So it's always, you know, it's always interesting. But so we'll just keep following that. The you know, of course, with Syracuse kind of, you know, having the big turnaround day, going from playing horrible to, you know, lighting up Georgia Tech. You know, that's those are the kind of things, you string a couple of those together and all of a sudden you're back in it.
Listen, I can't say enough that I can't wait to go and watch this game against Georgetown. You know what I mean? Because, and, you know, it's interesting talking about that and you bringing that up. You know, Syracuse-Georgetown is still the biggest rivalry for me. You know what I mean? It's not Syracuse-Duke. It's not Syracuse-North Carolina. I'm just stuck in the Big East. So Syracuse-Georgetown is the game that I always want to see. So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, it's got history, obviously. It's got, you know, the Carrier Dome is officially closed. It's got Patrick Ewing. It's got, you know, all those, you know, rough and tumbles. It's got, you know, John Thompson and Jim Boeheim. And now, of course, Patrick Ewing taking over. So, you know, you can't replace that history. When we go into the ACC and Mike Krzyzewski and Boeheim, their buddies, saying, well, we're going to have a friendly rivalry.
Yeah,
is that
whack.
A thing? Can you have a friendly rivalry?
No, you gotta hate them. You know what I mean?
How do you have a friendly rivalry, right? I mean, that's
no friendly rivalry. Listen, I have a great deal of Syracuse Georgetown. Everybody that knows me knows that when I was growing up, I always wanted to go to either Syracuse or Georgetown. Those are my two schools. And when I was coming and getting recruited, Georgetown had a whole lot of big men. So they had, if they remember, Jameel Watkins, Boubacar Al, Yaya Dia. I think they had Boumse over in Africa, like just waiting. So, you know, John Thompson said, well, you know, we have so many big men. So we don't really need another big man. I was like, cool. So my sophomore year, you know, I didn't really play much my freshman year. I was behind Otis Hill, just kind of more learning. But my sophomore year, the first time we played them, it was like my coming out party. It was like a breakout year. And I had like, 20 some points. I had like, you know, 13 rebounds, 6 blocks. And it was the best thing. So right after the game, I go right straight to Coach Thompson and I shook his hand and I said, you could have had me. And he said, I know. And I was like, I'm gonna make you pay every time we play you. And it was like the best feeling. So every time we played Georgetown,
awesome.
I just wanted to have my best game.
Right. Well, and that's the beauty of the rivalry, right? You raise up all the big rivalries. You know, you see it, they plan all year for the game. You know, you talk about like Michigan, Ohio State, and football just happened. Ohio State beat them again, and, And you know the Ohio State guys are saying that we just want it more than them. We start getting ready to the next day for next year's game. Like, that's right. How big a deal it is for them. And Auburn, Alabama, same thing. SU, Georgetown, same thing. You know, the day the schedule comes out, what's the first game you look for? Hey, when are we playing Georgetown? You know, and you people work their travel schedules around the Georgetown game. Let's come in and see that one. So.
And I think that's not going to change. I mean, even though we moved to the ACC, things are different. I just don't see North Carolina and Duke as replacing the rivalry of Syracuse and Georgetown. I just don't.
Well, we don't hate those guys enough yet. You know, something's got to happen where you really hate them, like really hate them. This friendly rivalry thing, that's – and, of course, you got to beat them a couple times too, you know. That
helps.
That also
you
helps.
You can beat them a couple times.
All right, before we take our break, speaking of this conversation, in the world of smack talking that goes against you, I don't know if you saw this, but Miami is playing Atlanta last night in Miami. Atlanta's up, you know where I'm going. Atlanta's up six with less than a minute to go, and Trae Young starts chirping over at the Miami bench. Oh, it's over. It's over. Miami scores the next 22 points. They tied it up at the end of regulation, and they scored the first 16 points of overtime to blow them out after the snark. And just goes to show you, man, you maybe wait till there's 5 seconds on the clock before you start saying something.
It was way too early to start talking. I was like, wait, look how much time you have on the clock. It can't be over yet. But yeah, I love Trae Young. I love how he plays. I think he's a great player. Yeah, everything like that. But yeah, that's not the way you do it.
and then the funny jab at the end, of course, Jimmy Butler on Instagram says, you know, the young fella was right. The game was over. And so
that's good.
I love that. I love it. And that's the fun part, man, is you know, it's always more fun when you win, so you can talk more smack. So that's the reason you win, right? They play the game just so you can talk smack when you win the game.
Oh yeah, especially if you go to social media. You go to social media and talk smack.
Yeah, I'm old school, man. We had to say it in the paper. You know, now you can just you had to wait till the next day to read it. Now you can just throw it out there.
That's true.
All right, we're going to take our first break here on Centers of Attention. I am Danny Shays. He is Aton Thomas, and we'll be right back.
This is Centers of Attention with Aton Thomas and Danny Shays.
And we are back on Centers of Attention with Aton Thomas. I am Danny Shays. And Aton, your Yankees, man, they couldn't quite get over the hump last year, so I think they figured if you can't beat them, join them. And they went out and they signed the stud for the Astros, the guy who took them out last year.
I am not mad at them at all. You know, the Yankees is an organization who is not going to take losing laying down. You know what I mean? They're going to go out and try to make something happen. And, you know, what better way to do it? So now the bar is set so high that, you know, anything other than the championship is not, you know, you have to win the World Series. Like, that's what has to happen right now. But, hey, like I said, the Yankees, they're not going to take losing. Laying down at all. So exciting
exactly.
Times for New York.
And what's interesting, you know, we talked about the Knicks so much, right? But the Yankees have never really lost their mojo. They might have had a couple of stretches here and there where they were down, had some down years. And, you know, for them, down years is going, I think they've only had one decade in the last 100 years they haven't, you know, won a World Series. And, right. You know, they've never really had, you know, been down like, you know, where the Knicks are right now, where they just have no mojo. And for them, you know, interestingly, they as good as they were last year, they didn't really have a number one starter, like a clear guy. So they bring in Garrett Cole to, you know, to be that guy. And when you have a, you know, bottomless pit of money, you know, it was interesting because they were competing against the Angels and the Dodgers in L.A., where Garrett Cole's from, the Southern California. But yet he ended up with the Yankees.
And I think that's great. It's just to, you know, it's interesting because everybody wants the Knicks to be like the Yankees. You know what I mean? As far as willing to go out and get the main players and bring them to New York, because New York is the Mecca. You know what I mean? Everybody should want to play in New York. I don't want to just get off into a Knicks rant because we're talking about the Yankees, but it kind of relates because that's what everybody wants. And it's not happening with the Knicks. That's why we're still frustrated, but
you know, it is what it is, I guess.
Well, it does make the Yankees now the team to beat. You know, they're definitely now, you know, easily the World Series favorites going into the season. You know, now they'll be the number one, you know, story going in. And, you know, so good for them. They went after him hard. They got him quick. A lot of times these star players, especially, you know, if you know anything about Scott Boras, the super agent who represents both him and Strasburg, who re-signed with the Nationals a couple days ago. Normally he holds guys out late and really gets the bidding war going, but Yankees said, we're not waiting. We're gonna go now. They put this you know, record offer on the table, 9 years, $300+ million. So, you know, it's definitely a win-win. I mean, you know, we'll be watching them, that's for sure.
I mean, you know, and we've both been part of the collective bargaining. I was on a negotiating team as well. And the fact that the MLB has no cap, do you think that's something that the NBA could adopt? I mean, that might be a later discussion, but it seems like it could work. But what are your thoughts on that? I wanted to ask you.
Well, the NBA has gone to cost certainty, you know, from the owner's side. And yes, we could spend a whole segment on this because, you know, I was there 20 years ahead of you when these things were kind of first even talked about. You know, a lot of these issues, you know, the things like salary cap and you know, max contracts. You know, those things were brand new ideas in the late 90s. So. So we can talk about the history of that, but the NBA has gone to cost certainty, and the salaries are so high, you know, you don't divide it up by as many players, you know, so the averages are exceptionally high with revenues growing. You know, it's a way different thing. Baseball's always, you know, talking about the, you know, the inequality between the big market and the small market team, something that the NBA doesn't have now because, again, of the revenue sharing. So now you can see a Milwaukee turn into a power where, you know, it's tougher in baseball. So
interesting. Yeah, we'll have to spend some more time on that.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk more about that. And speaking of juggernauts, the Patriots, like I said, coming off a rough week a little bit, you know, first that they ended up, you know, I watched most of the game the other night when they ended up losing with bad calls. I mean, you talk about two touchdown calls being taken away. You've got, you know, just like I said, on bad calls. And you had the, you know, the issue of the protests. Right, they already used theirs up. So when the touchdown was called at the end, you know, the guy stepped out of bounds. They didn't have a challenge left, so they couldn't even challenge it. Even though it was like that was a super obvious call play before, right? The tight end, you know, fumbles. Patriots could be running it back for a touchdown. It was called down by contact, which it clearly wasn't. But because they blew the whistle, the touchdown even got pulled back. So they got possession, you know, but didn't get the touchdown. So they come off of that. And now they got busted for videotaping the Bengals on the sideline, you know, talking about these, you know, bringing back the Spygate situation where they were kind of getting what we'll say competitive advantage. I don't know if it's quite cheating. Of course, Belichick claims that he didn't knowingly do anything wrong. And again, not even sure the point of videotaping a team on the sideline, but you know, but I'm sure if they're doing it, there's a reason.
Listen, okay, so first of all, I don't feel sorry for the Patriots in having a rough reffing game at all. I don't. And I know Paulie there. Paulie loves his Patriots and he loves his Tom Brady. Paulie there at the station. And I gotta say, every time the Patriots get busted for something that has to do with cheating, and then they say we had no idea that that wasn't in the rules or we couldn't do that, I give a big eye roll. And you can't consecutively all the time, I mean consistently, you know, try to bend the rules and claim ignorance. You're trying to cheat. You know what I mean? Or you're trying to get a competitive advantage or however you want to cleverly phrase it, you know? And that's one of the reasons why so many people don't like the Patriots. That's why so many people put asterisks by a lot of their Super Bowl wins because of things like this that happened. And, you know, that's why people don't like the Patriots.
All right, well, we're going to go over just a little bit because I want to make sure we know what the actual story is this time. Mm-hmm. The story this time was that, according to the Patriots, they had an advanced scout at the game. which you can imagine, who is being filmed for a series on employees for the team's internal website. And so he was like, basically a bio on the guy, what he does, what he looks for, here's him on the road, da da da. And part of that, they were just taking background shots of the team sideline for the first quarter. That's the story. Quarter they filmed the Bengals bench for just the first quarter, and again, not sure what you get out of it. The Bengals, worst team in the league at 1-12, so not sure. Well, I don't know if the Patriots felt they had to cheat for it, but anyway, that's the story. The NFL is investigating, as you can imagine, so we'll see where that one goes. I'm looking forward to following that one. Okay, and now again, Syracuse Georgetown coming up. We got a special guest, Jihadi White, former teammate, former Georgetown Hoya, and teammate of the big fella over there, Atan, in Washington. He's going to be on at the bottom of the hour to talk Georgetown. And don't forget, Seth Goldberg and I will be doing the pregame show all season long. And this week, we got SU Georgetown pregame at noon. So check that out. And you got Georgetown. Tell me a little about you and Jihadi. You guys were competitors at Georgetown, and then teammates with the Wizards.
Well, when I remember my freshman year at Syracuse, so I didn't really play that much. Otis Hill was in foul trouble really quickly, and all of a sudden, Coach Boeheim wanted to throw me in there against Jihadi. So I'm a scrawny little skinny freshman, you know what I mean? Didn't haven't played in, you know what I mean, a month or two. And then the biggest game, I get thrown in there against Jihadi White. And I set the record for the quickest foul out of any Syracuse player. I own that record. So every time they came down the court, it's like they just saw fresh meat and just tried to give Jihadi the ball. And he kept trying to dunk on me. And I'm not going to let him just dunk on me. You know what I mean? So absolutely, I'm going to foul him hard or try to, you know, and Jihadi's a big guy, you know, so, and I fouled out so quick and the papers killed me after that. But I was like, yeah, listen, you know what I mean? It was either
dunked on.
Right. One or the other.
All right, well, we're going to take a quick break here. We're going to come back with a former Georgetown star and NBA star, Jihadi White, after this on Centers of Attention. We'll be right back.
This is Centers of Attention with Atan Thomas and Danny Shays.
And welcome back to Centers of Attention. I am Danny Shays with Atan Thomas, and today brought to you by Mattress Express, home of the number bed by Instant Comfort. And today we have a special guest on the Burdick Toyota guest line, former Georgetown star Jihadi White and Atan Thomas tormentor on the line with us. Jihadi, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, Jihadi, I was telling the story before you got on about my freshman year at Syracuse, where, Otis Hill was in foul trouble, and I hadn't played in a long time. I didn't play that much my freshman year. And they threw me in against you, and y'all just kept going to you, and you kept trying to dunk on me. And I fouled out in four minutes or something like that. I don't even know if you remember that, but I remember it very well.
Yeah, I actually do remember it. I actually do. You know, I used to always make sure I was ready for Otis Hill. You know, for some reason, I really liked him as a player, and I liked him as a guy. But that's one of those games when I'm playing against Otis Hill that I'm in a zone, and you just happen to catch the end of that.
That's funny. That's so, Jihadi, Danny Shays, I played a little bit ahead of you. I was there in the late 70s, opened the Dome, and I was there Jim Boeheim's second year. So we crossed a little bit in the NBA at the end. Me on my way out, you on your way in. And, we've been talking SU Georgetown all week. Of course, you got my man Lewis Orr, my former teammate down there, assistant coaching, keeping right. that rivalry alive. And I had a couple of Georgetown teammates myself, played with Pat Ewing a little bit at the end. John Dern, if you remember, Bebe, he was my first point guard in the league. We're trying to keep that love-hate thing with Georgetown alive. We hate them when we're playing you, but then we get to know you a little bit and fall in love with you as players.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so that's funny because Bebe was my trainer. As soon as I left Georgetown, Coach Thompson said, your trainer will be Bebe Durin, John Durin. And so that's my right-hand guy. You know, he really got me into boxing. And then as a time, as soon as I got to the Wizards, once I left Georgetown, I went to the Wizards, and Patrick was my, assistant coach, the head big man coach. So, yeah, you know, it's a love hate with Georgia, with Syracuse players. But once we see you, and we see you all outside the game, which it's actually a brotherhood. You know, I talk to a lot of Syracuse players a lot, and, you know, especially on Facebook all the time. We just really keep in touch a lot because it's that family brotherhood rivalry thing.
Definitely, definitely. And I'm actually going to be front and center at the game this Saturday when Syracuse plays Georgetown. I have my AAU team, so I'll be bringing some of the guys there too. And I'm looking forward to it. You know what I mean? I like the way that y'all play. I know you've had a little bit of issues with some of the players. And, you know, Coach Orr, Lewis Orr, that was my guy at Syracuse. You know what I mean? Like really my guy. Like, he was at my wedding at my guy. You know, my guy. And I love what they're doing. Talk about the program right now at Georgetown and how the team is kind of forming and how Patrick is doing there as a head coach.
Well, yeah. Lewis Orr is definitely a good addition to Georgetown, big time. I got a chance to – I really didn't know him before, but I've – done a lot of EYBL AAU coaching in the past 3 years, and he's really been interested in a lot of our guys, him and Pat. So, you know, I really had a lot of communication with him, and they're just Lewis is a great guy. Patrick, he's a really good coach. His schemes, his defensive schemes, his offensive schemes, I think are bar none. It's just, I think Patrick had to start to understand and relate to college guys. You know, he's been around NBA players where, you know how NBA, they give you a little bit more freedom and they consider you as men and consider you to show up at work when it's time to go. College guys, you got to be a little more hands-on, a lot more hands-on, and a lot more structured, you know. And I'm thinking, as I'm watching this year, even though we've been through some troubles, he's really understanding how the college player works, and he's doing. And I think that I'm seeing a difference. You know, especially, you know, we beat Texas, we beat Oklahoma, OSU, we beat SMU. We should have beat Duke, but I think the NCAA God came into play. you know what I'm saying? So. I like the way the guys are looking this year. I like the way McClung is looking. I like how our point guards are looking. We have shooters, you know, we can depend on. We have a really good big, you know. And, you know, I think right now we just want to step up that recruiting. But I love the way Patrick is looking, and I like his schemes.
Yeah, John, tell me about McClung. He's a guy who I've seen a lot of his highlight reels. He brings a lot of excitement and energy to the game. And, I mean, he's been really a spark for you guys.
Yeah, so, you know, I thought he was just a highlight player first after watching him last year. I thought he was just one of those highlight guys that, you know, can jump real high, you know, but, you know, do fancy things, but probably, you know, not really going to give you much. You know, it's more hype than actually action. But it seems like he's really been working on his game this offseason, and he came back to, I think, be a very good player, an actual player, more than just a highlight reel. And if he keeps working on his game, he can have a good year, a good 2 more years at Georgetown.
You know, I was really impressed with, you know, we're both big men, and I love the way that you all feed Omer Yurtseven. Y'all, he gets the ball. You know what I mean? He just has to keep posting them up and go from block to block and have his hands up, and they're going to get it for him. But how do you like his development as a center, just overall throughout his entire career?
Oh, man, that's the – which one is that?
That's the big man. That's the big man, number 44, the big guy in the middle. Yeah.
Yeah, I like his development. Well, you know, one thing about Georgetown, it's an inside-out school. You know,
right.
all offense runs through the big man, you know. So just that alone, you know, us as big men at times, you know, before we barely touch the ball. You know, it got to go through one to two to three to four before it gets to us. So, you know, most time our assists are off the backboard, you know, off rebound. So when you just touching the ball through the offense, you know, you don't have to score. But when you get in the feel of touching that ball, you get a feel of confidence and a feel of being in, of getting comfortable in the game early. So I like the fact that Georgetown does that with the big man. And then just Patrick being over there, the big man development is second to none, you know. So I think it's just still one of the best big man schools.
You know, it's funny you bring that up. I was just going to ask you about that because, you know, one of the things we always talk about here as bigs, you know, Syracuse is all guards, right? They've had good big men over the years, but it's been very guard-centric. You know, you've got, you know, the entire coaching staff is guards, where Georgetown's been the opposite. It's been very big man-centric, where they've had good guards over the years, but really it's been a big man school. And that contrast has been something that has been very consistent over, you know, really the entire history of this rivalry, going back to my era. You know, back in the 70s. So, you know, it's interesting how that's, you know, that one issue has really defined these two teams.
Yeah, I agree. I always looked at that too. And one thing I've known is how Georgetown make up for the good guards and the amount of guards that are great players at Syracuse. We have to make it up on the defensive end. One thing Georgetown preaches, defense, and we're a hard-nosed defense team. So that gives us our comfort to compete with Syracuse because we know that our defensive schemes are solid. But Syracuse, they can shoot you out the gym. They will slash, you know, through the paint with those guards. And, you know, Syracuse has some great bigs as well, you know. So, you know, Ton, D.C., Otis, you know, but, you know, you all are known for those, you know, great guards.
Let me ask you, we both played with Michael Jordan. And, you know, people always ask me this question. So I don't figure I can ask you now. What is your favorite Michael Jordan memory from playing with him with the Washington Wizards?
Shoot. People always ask me that question.
All the time.
But you know what? I'll be real with you. Playing with Michael Jordan, yeah, at first you were like, wow, I'm playing with Mike. This is Michael Jordan. But the cool thing about him was he was so comfortable in the locker room and on the court that he just became another teammate. You know? Yep. So, and I'll be real with you, the memory that I can say, I probably wouldn't want to say, you know. you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, I mean, because he was that much of a teammate, that real of a teammate that, you know, it was you just don't, you know, call a teammate out. I mean, it's nothing bad. It was just things that you would like to keep for yourself. I say one thing is when we got on the plane and, you know, with Michael Jordan and it was Mike and Oak and I think it was Larry Hughes and Teron Lou, you always sit in that front table and gamble, right?
Uh-huh.
And on the plane, Mike just lights up a cigar. And the flight attendant says, sir, you can't smoke on a plane. I guess you didn't know it was Michael Jordan. He just looked there and said, no, it's all right. It's all right. And she was like, okay. He just kept smoking on the plane.
I remember that. That's great.
So, Jahani, catch us up on what you're doing now. I had to kind of laugh when I was going through your bio. I saw that you had an acting career going for a while. And because I used to always joke that, yeah, the only way I'd get in a movie is it would be a monster movie. Right?
Right.
And, but you actually were in a monster movie. So tell us about that and what you're doing now.
It was more of an alien movie, you know. That's a little step up from a monster, you know. It was more of a sci-fi.
I didn't mean to short you there. Yes, it was an alien is much better than a monster movie.
I wasn't just running around just growling, you know.
That was great.
Yeah, it just so happened growing up, So when I was in high school, you know, our coach would to get our footwork better, he would actually have us big guys, us big strong guys, take ballet classes. So the lady, the instructor who taught us ballet, ended up being a casting director in Hollywood. And so I always stayed good friends with her. And just so happened when it came time for me, you know, toward the end of my career, she was like, hey, I have some movie roles if you want to take them. I was like, well, why not? Let's try them out. Yeah, ended up playing in some movies and doing some great commercials. So that's great. Now, you know, this is my first year actually coaching high school. I coach high school kids with EYBL with Bradley Beal for a while, but this is my first time being a high school coach, and I'm really loving that. You know, I have some good coaches. I'm on the staff with some good coaches, and other than that, I just do trucking, and I have a real estate company where I have properties. But, you know, I try to stay around the game as much as possible and pass the torch along to these young guys. And it's very fulfilling.
Awesome. Well, that's great. Love the fact that you're giving back and giving back all that knowledge. And this is the first time I've had a chance to chat with you for a period of time. And Jahadi, thank you so much for coming on. We're looking forward to some more SU-Georgetown rivalry. Now, of course, I'm rooting against you guys on Saturday. And I'll probably be cussing at you.
Okay.
I'll be cussing at you guys a little bit. But thanks so much for coming on.
All right. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. Jahadi White, former Georgetown star, getting ready for the big game this Saturday. We'll be back right after this on Centers of Attention with the Tom Thomas. I am Danny Chase. Stick around.
This is Centers of Attention with Aton Thomas and Danny Shays.
And welcome back to Centers of Attention with Aton Thomas. I am Danny Shays. And speaking of Georgetown, don't forget, you can watch the next chapter of the Syracuse-Georgetown rivalry with some of the guys who have been there in the past on twitch.tv/QSportsTalk. And while you're watching the game or listening to the game on TK99, pull up twitch.tv/QSportsTalk to hear live reaction from Roosevelt Bowie, Lawrence Moten, Eric Diebendorf, and others from the Armory Square Studios. And be very interactive, just like sitting in the living room, having those guys watching the game with you. So check that out, like I said, on twitch.tv/QSportsTalk. And Aton, I loved hearing about Jahadi and his movies. I was actually in a movie once. It was kind of the start of my career. True story. I was in the movie Eddie with Whoopi Goldberg. We co-starred in the movie. Well, to be honest, she starred in the movie.
Co-starred.
And I had a 30-second spot as an extra. But if you know the movie,
hey,
she was a big basketball fan, ended up coaching the Knicks through a series of events I won't bore you with. And so they all the scenes throughout the season. I played a tall, white basketball player. It was a stretch, but, you know, I got those kind of acting chops. And so I did. And I actually got to spend 15 minutes with Whoopi in front of the taco bar one day at when I was down there shooting. So we had a great conversation. And believe it or not, I still get residuals from the movie.
Oh, that's great.
Every month I get a check for sometimes 20 cents, sometimes a buck and a half. You never know. But the movie is still out there, and I still get checks. So it just goes to show you, man, you got to learn to build those passive income streams. So not bad for a 30-second bit 25 years ago. So
no, that's great. And if the movie comes on Netflix, those residual checks will get a little bit bigger.
Exactly. I might get $4 or $5 out of it. So go check me out. So the scene is where Whoopi grabs the ref's wig and his toupee and throws it in the stand. So that's my big scene. So it was memorable.
I remember
that
scene.
Yeah, so next time you watch the movie, you can check it out. I'm in the credits. So now I'm official. I'm in the credits. And they spelled my name right. So that's
great. That's great.
We'll be back tomorrow on Centers of Attention. I am Danny Shays. He is Aton Thomas. Thank you for spending that time with us today, and we'll be back tomorrow. See you then.